Before we begin, for those of you that don't know her, Dr. Gracie Brandt is our NAESP Associate Executive Director for Professional Learning, and she is the one that who's organized all of this, and so we're so happy to have her. Gracie, thank you for being here and welcoming Andy.
Thank you, Honor, and it's a pleasure to be here this afternoon. I am excited to introduce Dr. Andy Jacks. Of course, I always think he's the man who needs no introduction because he's so popular. But if you don't know much about Dr. Jacks, he is a practicing principal. In fact, we were talking now that he is going to be moving up to a position where he's going to be a principal. He's been the principal at Ashland Elementary in Manassas, Virginia, and he's going to be moving to a K-8 school, the Noakesville School. Mm-hmm. And so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Really excited to see the work that you're going to do for them. They're very lucky to have you. But Dr. Jacks is also very near and dear to NAESP. He's our senior fellow in our NAESP Centers for Advancing Leadership. He works closely with all the centers, especially the Center for Innovative Leadership, which he helped NAESP get started. And this summer, he presented at our annual conference in Chicago that we were so lucky to be face-to-face. He had a great session. We had a lot of positive comments. So we asked him to come back and do a great webinar. We can never have enough information about how to handle those discipline situations in our school. So he is always passionate, energetic, and in it to win it. And he's going to share his wisdom with you today. So welcome, Dr. Jacks.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Branch. Thank you, Gracie. I really appreciate your friendship and your support and NAESP's support. You know, it's been great to, and hey, Jenny, and I am watching this chat box. I have this whole thing set up. I wish I could like reflect my screen right now. I have the chat box, the website, the PowerPoint. I got a video. So I'm all locked in with all of you. So I'm seeing in real time if you're making any comments. So Jenny from Higginsville, Missouri, thanks for jumping in. And I want to make this relevant and meaningful to you. So as Gracie shared, I have presented this in multiple locations and times, like this conference this summer, but I really adjusted things based on what I thought would be relevant for people right now in their schools, doing exactly, I know what I'm doing every day. I've been an elementary principal for 12 years, and I'm excited to go into elementary and middle school and a combined K-8 school soon. But at the end of the day, this beginning of the year time is tough. It was tough before COVID, and now with the return of kind of sort of normal school, sort of, but not, it's got even more complicated. As you can see, I am in my office. I got permission from my boss to take a minute to go ahead and do this. I'm in my office here at Ashland, and I'm excited to share with you. And so I see Will is jumping in from New Hampshire. And we'll go ahead and get started. I titled this presentation, In It to Win It. Because at the end of the day, I think we should really be in it to win it for every single one of our students. And also understand what winning is for our kids. I'm going to talk about that in a second. If you want more of my resources and things, I have a podcast, Discipline Win. Pretty much anywhere you can listen to podcasts. I have a book coming out here very soon. That should be out. We keep saying like, okay, we need to do this, make one revision, check it out, get this out there. And that should be out here within the next week or so. And then you can see all the social media. You guys, I don't know if we all connected on social media. If we're not, follow me, I'll follow you, and we'll keep in touch online. So let's go ahead and get started. So I have a first question for you in here. I want to make this engaging for those that are attending live. If you're not attending live and you're watching this later, then I'm going to try casting that dialogue in our conversation. So first question, if you're attending live, is what is the most difficult thing you are facing right now, school discipline and or social-emotional learning? Right? Because I mean, I'm in the middle of all this in the beginning of the year. We have kids that are starting that never attended preschool. We have kids that are going through their own issues with their families. We have their own just emotional things going on in their head. You have behavioral things. For me, I got in trouble a lot as a kid. I can really relate to them getting in trouble, especially when they're younger. As a parent, I got three kids, and I understand that, you know, as a parent, we got to be careful because, you know, it's not these parents' fault that some of these kids are doing what they're doing. They're just going through some things. And so what do you think are some of those things that you're facing in your schools right now? I want to hear from you. I'm going to read them out to the crowd. So I'm seeing big emotions with small skills. Oh, I like that. Jenny, that's a tagline right there. Big emotions with small skills. Kids that are going through massive, just massive, heavy-duty emotional things, and they're not really prepared for it because their skills aren't really built up developmentally for that in some cases. So that's a good one. Some people are still virtual. Transportation's an issue. Yes, transportation's an issue here. You know, tricky thing about transportation is that it also makes kids come to school late maybe or leave school late and stay after school longer than they should have to. So then they just it creates a normal school day and creates it sort of wonky and like out of place for a lot of our kids, out of sorts. Different levels of students. We have kids that are all over the place. We have the normal bell curve where kids are sort of like, you have the average, you have the high, and you have the low. But now that is really flattened out. You have really high, really low, and it's hard to figure out where everyone is. Very aggressive kinders. I see Kristen put that, kindergartners. We're seeing that too. And if you're talking about what to do with them, you're in the right place because we're going to talk about that because that's exactly what I'm going through too. And then just the holidays are throwing us all off, right? I know in Northern Virginia, we just added all of the, various holidays from around the world, not just sort of Christian holidays, but Jewish holidays and everything else. So like we'll be off tomorrow for Yom Kippur. And that now has created a new beginning of the year where it's like 3 days, 2 days, 5 days, 4 days. And that can have an effect. So there's a lot of things going on with that affect school discipline. I chose to talk about school discipline because for me, this was one of the most challenging aspects of school improvement that we have. As a principal for a long time, I realized that there's all these different things that we do. We work with academic issues. We work with, different subjects, physical education, everything else. But ultimately, this is the one area I felt like I was not prepared for. I still struggled in. And this is the one area that teachers and staff and administrators just go like this all the time, right? And virtually raise your hand if you know what I'm talking about. Because discipline is one of those things that pits admin and teachers just against each other. And it shouldn't be that way. If we're all in it together when things are easy, we should be all in it together when things are tough. And discipline will definitely test us on that. So for me, I did a lot of research. I did my dissertation on it. We did stuff for the book and just in general, constantly reading about this issue. I want to share some of those things that I think are important, especially right now when we get into what discipline should be for our kids and some tips and strategies on what you can do right now. One of the first things I want you to think about is what does it mean to win? If you haven't seen this clip before, if you're a sports person, Herm Edwards was a coach for the NFL. He's now an announcer on one of the shows for the NFL. He has this great line that says, and it's, he says it like this, way better than me. You play to win the game. He has this whole thing where he was talking to some, he was in the, an interview after the game, and they're asking him about whether they're really trying to win or not, whether they're okay with a certain thing they're rebuilding for next year. And he was talking about, no, we play to win the game. That's the one reason you're there. You play to win the game. That's why he loves it. That's why he's there. He has that mindset to win whatever he's doing. And with discipline, I think we should be there too. We're not just trying to manage these situations. We're not just trying to manage emotions. We're not just trying to manage kids and hopefully we can get them through until they leave us. No, we want to win with their behavior. We want to win and improve their behavior now or in the near future or maybe even long term so that we see real results. And that's how we win. One, we win by including them in school. So you win by keeping them in. I'm going to say that again. You win by keeping them in. I'm not going to get into it like crazy right now, but there is so much research on the negative impacts of exclusion, like suspensions and kicking kids out of class in the hallway, into other classes. And all. There's so much research on the negative side of that. In fact, there is like zero research out there that says it's in any way a positive experience for kids. In fact, not always exclusionary discipline bad for kids because if you get one suspension, you're more likely to have another suspension. And then from there, it's that school to prison pipeline and a lot of other negative effects that go with it. But schools don't feel safer. The perception of safety isn't even there for schools that suspend more. So this is perception thing that like, okay, if you take care of business, if you're tough on kids, then people will feel like you have a safe environment. Research shows that that's not true. And I could talk for a whole hour just on that alone. But you play to win the game, and winning is keeping kids in school. And I'm going to talk about why and what that means. So one of the biggest things to think about is what is school? and especially now after we're dealing with COVID, I shouldn't say after, while we are dealing with COVID, because one thing I keep trying to remind myself and everyone around me is that we are still right in the middle of all this thing. And even though schools are trying to, you know, catch everybody up and bring everyone back like we're supposed to be, like we were pre-pandemic, whatever that was, you know, we're right in the middle of it still. And we were doing a lot of this work before the pandemic. So it's not like all of a sudden we're, you know, we weren't working hard and we're going to work harder now. We were working, you know, super hard before the pandemic, and we're just keep rolling with that. But what is the point of education? If you really think about it, are we educating kids to think about the whole child in mind? Are we educating kids with just our academic focus? For a very long time, schools are so academically focused that that's all we focus on, and then that's all we get. We get progress, we monitor, and then we see progress in things that we focus on. And that's pretty much academics. If you look at your schedule in your day, what does it say? Does it say reading, math, behavior? No, it says reading, math, maybe encore, like you know, art, music, and PE and those things, but it doesn't say anything about social skills or social-emotional learning. Typically not. Our schools need to be much more balanced to have the whole child in mind. I love this quote by Dr. King. The function of education is to teach one to think intensively and to think critically. Intelligence plus character, that is the goal of true education. And it was important then, and it's important now to really think about what is education and why are kids coming to school. We're trying to create citizens that are productive, that work well, that have good social skills as adults. And we're doing, are we doing a great job? I task you, next time you go on social media, ask if education over the years has done a great job with social skills for kids. I would say maybe not. There's a whole movement when I was a kid about making sure that you felt good about yourself, self-esteem, and all those things. But other than that, I don't know how much we were really taught to do interpersonal skills as we grew up. As an adult, and I look at my, you know, my friends and my neighbors and all that, and you look at social media, it's a pretty tough place right now. We're fighting all the time, and that's something we need to really think about when our kids are growing older. Maybe we can make a better situation for them than they had or than we had, right? So that's always our goal as parents, to give our kids something better than we had growing up, and that's something to really think about here. So what does that mean for schools? Well, one, social-emotional learning is something that's thrown out there all the time, specifically the emotional component of things. My work tends to focus more on the social side of things. I really talk about self-regulation and emotions and, you know, sort of like breathing and like calming yourself down. But ultimately, I think so much of what we do with self-regulation is social. We are social beings. If you look at the SEL 5 Core Competencies by Castle, which is a collaborative for academic, social, emotional learning, they have these five areas, which are self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, relationship skills, and making responsible decisions. Now, when I see that, I think of one thing, self-discipline, right? Discipline is self-discipline. We look at school discipline, improving behaviors, helping kids work with others. So much of it is self-discipline. Things that, honesty, I still work on. Things that you probably still work on. Things that as adults, oh, went too fast, there we go. Things that as adults, we still work on. That self-discipline is critical on how we interact and work with others and keep ourselves in check. As adults and as educators, we really need to think about how we are self-disciplined first so that we can then help others be self-disciplined. If we don't know how to check ourselves, then we're going to wreck ourselves. I say it like Ice Cube always says, check yourself before you wreck yourself. If we don't check ourselves and we don't understand how these things matter for us, then it's really difficult to teach them in kids. And I think adults have a really hard time with this. And if you look at how discipline is handled with adults, so much of discipline for adults is all about long-term goals and routines and habits and doing these positive, like, you know, incentives for yourself to achieve these great results that you want. It's all sort of positive-based. We talk about students a lot of times for discipline. It gets very negative really fast. Blame and shame and all these problems that we put on kids. It's not the same kind of attitude. One aspect of things, if we treated kids like we treat adults when it comes to discipline, that's a good sort of positive spin on it. So when you look at your kid and you think, okay, this kid needs discipline, think about Tony Robbins and like these other motivational things that we do to discipline and to really create self-discipline and positive results in adults. We need to inspire kids to change. We need to help them with all these social issues and self-management if we truly want them to get better. Because if you just punish them, they're just going to do, you know, what they have to do to not get punished. But they're not going to actually change all of these things. For me, this is what it's all about. When schools are focused in growing self-discipline in our students, every single one of them, some have it easier than others, then they will see the students choose to behave in ways that align to their goals. Whose goals? Not the school's goals. They may be aligned, but ultimately we want students to choose how to align to their goals. We want students to have ownership in their progress and their performance so that they can feel invested in their path going forward. When they're invested in their path, they will actually make an attempt to get better. They will want to get better. Like we say to staff, we want to inspire, not require. We want to motivate, don't mandate. We say all these cool things to staff, like we don't, you know, want to be tough on staff. We want to get them to be excited. Same thing with kids. We want kids to be excited. We want them to really think internally about how they can improve themselves. And that starts at the very young age. Developmentally, they have a harder time when they're younger. But as they age, they can take more and more and more ownership internally to their actions so that they can help improve themselves. And then as they become adults, they'll have those skills to be more prepared for the life that they're going to lead, which is a very tough world out there. So we have sort of this moral obligation as well to make sure that we're actually developing the whole child, not just their reading ability, but their self-management ability, their self-discipline. And so it really comes back down to them. That student needs to take ownership, and we need to do everything we can to help create that sense of sort of self-development. So let's dig into some sort of content here. There's a great model. It's been around for a while by Anderson Garrison, the Modes of Interaction Model. And you may be thinking, okay, this is nothing new. We know this already. But I want just a reminder, because it's a good reminder for me. They describe this interaction model to get deep and meaningful learning as three critical components. You have the student, you have the teacher, you have the content. Think back, how much has been in your professional development, your professional learning, has been on student relationships, student-teacher relationships? How much has been on content? So much of what we do is we provide training for teachers and administrators on content. We focus so much on reading ability and things like that, which is good. I'm not saying don't do that. But that creates good reading teachers. But doesn't necessarily create good behavioral teachers. So much of what our interaction is with our kids has to do with that student-teacher relationship, the student-to-student relationship, which is them developing themselves and reflecting on their own actions, and the teacher-to-teacher relationship, which is that their own self-reflection on their end. That is such a huge part of learning that sometimes we just say, oh yeah, create relationships with people. But what is a relationship with someone? What does that really mean to have a relationship with someone? You know, there's research on what a developmental relationship is, which is you actually empower people, you actually care about them and show them that there's a future that they have. You know, you really like have this sort of relentless optimism for their path forward. You know, unconditional, maybe not love, but unconditional care that you give them a chance every single day. That's what a real student-teacher positive engaged relationship is. There's a difference between a relationship and an acquaintance. We have that in our own lives. We have a lot of people we know, but just because you know them doesn't mean you really have a truly amazing, meaningful relationship with them. And the same goes with our students. So many times we say, oh, I have a relationship with every single one of my students. I would argue you probably don't. It's really difficult to have a really engaging, meaningful, and positive and lasting relationship. It takes a lot of work. And we're going to talk about how to do that. But that's something to start from the beginning, is just be honest and open with all of our staff about, okay, it's going to be work to do. And it's going to take time and investment to make that happen. But one thing that came out clear in my research for my dissertation, and one thing that came clear on the research out there, one of the number one factors for improving behavior is making sure that that student has a meaningful and positive relationship with at least one adult. It doesn't need to be everybody. At least one adult you have to have a positive and meaningful relationship with. That's really important. So many times we think they have to have a relationship that's positive with everyone in the building. They don't. They don't. In fact, the research is clear. It shows more that it's with an adult than even with a peer. And that's why it's so important to have check-in, check-outs, and all those things where you at least match up one person with that child. And it doesn't have to be you. Maybe it will be you. Maybe you're the one that can connect with them. Maybe it won't be. Maybe it'll be a secretary or custodian or another teacher from another grade level. Maybe it's the PE teacher. Whatever it's going to be, you have to find one adult for all these kids and make it really, really impactful for them. But discipline isn't easy, right? And I want, if you're in the chat box, I want you to chime in on this one. What has been some of your discipline mistakes? Let's be honest here, this is a safe space. What are some of your discipline mistakes? I'm just saying, I've made every single one of these mistakes, and I fight to not make them every day because it's a really hard job. But discipline, we keep sort of falling all over ourselves because we do things that are just really ineffective because we're angry. You know, we let emotions dictate our actions. Sometimes it's, you know, we're assuming that, you know, it's just a behavior problem. And reality is, no, it's really an academic issue. They need to learn more. They need to be higher level. They're very frustrated in class. They don't think that they can succeed. Even if they're like, they can do it, they may feel like they can't do it and then they just give up. Sometimes we don't consider family norms and cultural norms. I mean, like in my family, we argued all the time. We fought all the time. I don't know how that, if that's what it was for you, but you know, we would argue, we'd bring up hot topics and just argue them. It's almost like a card game. We need a card game in our family. All right, hot topic number one, put it down. And then we would just argue. It's just what we did, always. We still do it. My mom, when she visited me last time, she lives in another state right now. When she came and visited, she's like, she had her coffee in the morning and then she sits down and she goes, all right, Andy, what do you think about critical race theory? I'm like, that's how we're starting the morning? That's how we're starting the morning? You know, it's just, but that's how we just like to talk about big topics and sort of have our voice. So when I go in as a student in high school or something and I'm with, you know, my physics teacher or something and they want to talk about what these issues are and I'm arguing with them because that's what I'm used to doing, they put me in detention, you know, because they don't understand that that's just my family norm. And that's not even a cultural norm. That's a family norm. But culturally, there's students who either will be more outgoing or less outgoing based on their cultural norms and how they grew up. And so those things have to be taken into account for how behaviors are. We have to get away from what we expect and get back to what is sort of developmentally appropriate for where they're coming from. We have to expect that they're not going to comply all the time. We expect that they just always should listen to us and always behave. That's not true for anybody. That's not true for adults. I don't do that all the time. In fact, we love saying that we're going to be rogue. We love this idea of like, I'm going to fight against the system. I'm going to go against the norm, right? We almost honor that nowadays. So why wouldn't our kids do those things too? All right, so there's all these things. And the one thing that I really, for me, that's changed is that shame and blame component of it. We have to stop shaming and blaming our teachers. We have to stop shaming and blaming our parents and, of course, our students. For the students, especially at the elementary level, so much at the elementary level isn't their fault. All of this stuff comes from their home life, how they grew up, how they're developed, other schools they're in. All this stuff comes to them. And yes, they need to start taking responsibility for it. We need to develop their behavior, but we got to stop blaming them. In a lot of cases, it's developmentally or disability related, it's definitely not their fault. And that helps you to, when you're working with them, to think, you know, okay, they're doing the best they can. They need help. Our teachers, honestly, like, I really believe that maybe, you know, you may have a 0.1% that's not doing a good job. I think 99.99% of the time, teachers are doing a fantastic job in very crowded classrooms with high expectations and a lot going on. They're expected to meet every kid where they're at and develop them over a year's worth of growth. And it's tough. I think they're doing the best they can too. So we need to stop shaming them. That's something that here, you know, we've gotten back and forth, and I appreciate my teachers that have taught me that lesson. They call me out on that if they think I'm getting too tough on them. And in fact, we need to be more supportive than shaming when that happens. Just like we don't want to exclude and shame kids, we don't want to do that with teachers as well. So, you know, I saw some chat, overreacting was one. Charles said that overreacting, yeah, we could definitely overreact with minor. And if you look at the research on exclusionary discipline, one of the things that really was clear is that, you know, there's like three big things with exclusionary discipline that you would maybe have kids out of school. It's really more criminal acts. You have drugs, weapons, and serious violence. Those are typical things. When I say serious violence, I mean like, you know, like massive, like gang fights and stuff. Those are things that typically would warrant, you know, police involvement and then potential exclusion. And I don't want to say I would still do that because I still think you make a case of not always doing, there are other paths anyways you could take. That being said, there is a reality of all that. But you look at big school districts that have done massive studies as to who has been suspended and why. Like upwards of 60% of the kids that were suspended, especially at the secondary levels, were things like, you know, believe it or not, truancy, cell phone usage, you know, disrespect, defiance, things that were really considered much lower level than those big three. So it's really something to think about. You know, are we really reacting in a way that's appropriate? And also, what I really come down to, will it make a difference? Yes, you can show who's boss, but will it change the behavior? They're just going to come back the next day, and they're going to just be more mad at you. And is that really the way you want to go? Ultimately, we should be trying to fix the behavior. And sometimes for me, personally, that meant I don't suspend kids. I haven't suspended kids in years, and I have plenty of reasons why I could. And I have all sorts of programs that have behavioral issues, and I literally have scars on my hands from restraint and all those issues. But at the end of the day, I just realized that it doesn't work. And I won't do a practice that's bad for kids. I refused to do a practice that I know is going to be bad for kids or not help them in some way, especially when I know that there could be something else. Now, I'm going to start diving into things that you can do. Because ultimately what I came down to my teachers was that they wanted to know what they could do instead. A lot of times when teachers get frustrated, and this is advice for administrators out there, they want to know what we can do instead of, so if you go home, if you go back and just say, we're not going to suspend, that's not good enough. Trust me, it won't work. They'll just get mad at you. They'll bring up the worst case scenarios. Well, what happens when a kid does this? That's just what happens. You have to give them something else. You have to train our teachers to be more productive in behavioral interventions and understand how to actually improve behavior. I think teachers just want to help. And so help them help the kids. So let's get into what that really means as far as helping our kids. One thing that, for me that caught me was just this idea of really thinking how learning theories affect behaviors. Because I don't know how you were, like, I was in my undergrad classes and they're going over, you know, Piaget and Skinner and all these people. And I'm, you know, I may have been out the night before with a hungover, you know, who knows? Like, were you really taking all these things seriously in your undergrad? And did you even think about what those mean? Some of you may be just spot on this stuff. You're like psychology majors or something. But really, I didn't really understand these as well as I could have until I started doing the work. And frankly, even when I had kids, it helped me understand a little better. So let's walk through a little bit of these, help understand what that means for education. One, classical conditioning with Pavlov, the whole Pavlov's dog. That's this whole idea of that we automatically react to things in our environment. Here, if someone's trying to get through the door and they hear dogs, you know, snarling and woofing at the door, then they're going to be like, okay, I'm going to just walk away, right? You just automatically can sense that and react to it. It's instinctive responses. There's a lot of things in our school that are happening, whether we realize it or not. Are we nice and warm and kind, or are things a little bit cold, and are they not so welcoming in our school? Those things can create some automatic responses. The other thing to think about that is our kids are coming with automatic responses already built in because they may have had a life of trauma. They may have a life where they don't trust anybody. And when you come up to them and say, hey, welcome, they're thinking, I don't trust this person has an agenda and they're out to get me. It's an automatic reaction that we have to get through. It's sort of conditioned in them. It's behavioral, this kind of stuff. The other thing is Skinner. With operant conditioning, the operant word, which means that you can have something like a specific tangible thing that will condition people to do something. You can go either reward or punishment. So, you know, prizes and incentives or punishment and consequences. And both are meant in the behavioral world as ways to get people to do things that you want them to do, which is that word operant. So in this case, you have a sign that says free tacos. Maybe people come in because there's an incentive. I want to open the door because there's free tacos. This is the experiment of the mouse and the cheese where the mouse wanted to get outside of a cage because they saw cheese. And they kept figuring it out until they finally got out of there because there's that incentive. You could go the reverse. You could put something on the door that looked like a sign that said, like, nuclear, or biohazard containment center. You're like, oh, I'm not going in there, right? So it works both ways. In our classrooms, we do a lot with prizes and punishment. And one thing I recommend, and I could talk a whole lot about this, but I'm going to do it just quickly, is if you haven't read this book, this is a good one, right? This is Alfie Cohn, Punished by Rewards. It's going to make you think. It'll challenge your thinking on all this we do for prizes and fuzzies in a jar and all those things. They have a minor short-term, potential short-term change in behavior, mostly with kids that already behave anyways. But they have a potential negative side effect long-term with kids. We really have to think about that. Ultimately, we want something higher level than that, and we'll keep going. So cognitive constructivist, which is Piaget, that's that idea that you build upon prior knowledge, and some of that is very developmental. You can't build upon this. You can't get to here until you get to here. So you're constantly sort of building and chunking and developing over time. He would argue that some kids just developmentally are not ready for certain things, which I find that very true. Some of our kids coming into kindergarten are not developmentally ready for some of the things we're asking them to do. And just because they're 5 and other kids are 5 and they can do it, doesn't mean that this child at 5 can do it. Kids develop at different rates. We say that we know it, but we treat them all the same. So we have to think about how we treat students based on their individual developmental level, not their age or their grade developmental. Something to think about even within their grade is one of the first things I do when I talk to kids or talk about kids to teachers, I ask, what's their age? Like, what's their actual age? What is their birth date? For me, I find a huge trend in kids that were born earlier, closer to that cutoff. So for us, our cutoff is September 30th. If you're born in September and you're on the youngest side of the grade level, you barely made that cutoff, likely you will probably have some behavioral issues because you were literally younger than every single person at grade level. So a kid that's a full year older could be in your class. So of course you're developmentally not going to be at the same place. And as kids get older, we forget and think all that all averages out. It doesn't necessarily all average out. especially at our eighth levels in elementary. So you really have to think about, you know, what that means of building on. Another thing you can use this to your advantage is having mentor students. So having students mentor each other. So using that reading buddy approach, we have like a fifth grade class helping a second grade class. Instead of just thinking about reading with that, you can think about that with behavior and teaching kids how to socially interact. As they've already learned those lessons, they can help the younger kids with those lessons. Next thing, which is something I really get into, which is that social cognitive learning, and that's Bandura. And his idea is that we learn by imitating, by looking at others that model things, by observing the world around us. It's very social in nature, whereas the behavioralist thought that everything is sort of just we either automatically do things or it can be controlled. He would argue that we do things based on a choice, based on what we observe around us, because it may or may not be in our best interest to do that or something that we want to do. It's all very social. So the way to get through this door is to play a video and watch others do it, and then you can learn from seeing others do something. While I think that's the way to go for social cognitive learning and how to change behaviors, I think there's a danger to this, which is the conformity theory. And Solomon Asch had a great experiment where he had people all go into a room, and they were giving answers to very easy questions on charts. And what they didn't understand is that he had all of them in on the experiment except for one person. And he did multiple rounds of this. So the one person would go into a room with all these other people, like 7, 8, 9 people, and they would answer an easy question, but they would answer it wrong on purpose. And that one person is put in a predicament. Do I go with the group, even though I know it's wrong? Or do I stand out from the group and basically potentially make a fool of myself? What he found was people, you already know this, people tended to conform to the group. Now you can so much see this with political and social media things that in general we tend to conform with groups. So if you're going to work with kids, you have to really think about that, because they will conform to their friends. They will conform to their family. They will conform to their school. Now I think we can use that to our advantage, where they can conform to us. If we as a school can get together, bind together, they can conform to what we're doing, as opposed to the other way around. But if you don't watch out, I call it the mob mentality, right? That mob is going to go one way or the other. And one thing to think about, especially the older kids, is involve their friends. Because if you're telling the kid one thing, and then they go to their friends, and their friends are doing something else, well, then you're fighting that. It's a dynamic that puts that kid in an unfair position. Pull in those friends. Try to get everyone in on that too. So, for instance, something we deal with upper elementary kids sometimes, these social media accounts where they start getting on, what was the one? I don't remember. This one social media account a couple years ago where everyone was getting on it. It was getting weird, and we were trying to pull this kid out of it. We realized it wasn't just this one kid. It was a bunch of kids in it. So now we're pulling all those kids in. Even if it wasn't an issue with them, we're pulling them all in. Like, okay, you got to think about this all as a group. Because that mob mentality, that contagious thing from your friends, is so powerful. And I want you to think about what this means for us. This is what I'm going to challenge you a little bit, especially as administrators. We do these things and model the wrong things sometimes in education as administrators. And this has really caught me up. This just came up not too long ago. So I literally put this in the slide the other day because I think this is really something to think about. We should model as administrators what we want our teachers to do with kids. That means how we socially interact. That means how we do interpersonal learning and cooperative learning in the classroom should match what we do in staff meetings. But this one thing should match too, how we reward or have relationships with our staff. So I thought about this because I love these little memes and things like this. So I think using Jeans Days as rewards for good behavior to manipulate staff is exactly the wrong message to send teachers as they look to build relationships over rewards. Because that's what it's about, relationships over rewards. Relationships will affect positive change way more than any one little reward or even series of rewards are going to do. So if you're one of the staff, and you may be honest that, you know, we don't give Jeans Days out, they have to earn it, or you can use Jeans Days to bribe them to do something you want. I go the other way around. I get in Jeans Day every day because I don't really care. It lets me wear jeans if I want to. It brings the whole place to more of an even playing field. It builds a relationship because they know that I'm really in it for them. It's not really about me holding power over them for jeans. And in turn, they like me better and they trust me more and they understand the whole system of this thing. So I don't use it as a bribe over their head for ownership and power and control. I just say we're all in this together and let's just do something that makes sense, and I just give into that. I really don't care. It's not a big deal. But to them, it matters. And so for me, I'd rather have the positive relationship with them, so if I need them to do something, I can just ask them and they'll want to do it because they like me, versus I have this carrot, you know, or this stick above them, or in this case, that dog treat that's asking them to do it because, oh, I give you Jeans Day. That's a sense of power and control. That's sending the wrong message because that's what they end up doing with their kids. When you think about how you're going to teach a lot of these SEL skills, social-emotional learning, or social skills. I think sometimes one thing to think about, too, is that social-emotional learning, it's just social skills. How do we teach kids how to interact with each other and then interact in their own minds? There's really two different paths you can take here. One is to integrate these skills within the day, and that can be done through different themes and strategies, cooperative learning structures. I'm a big fan of Kagan cooperative learning structure. They'll shout out to them just because I think that really structuring how kids interact with each other in groups is critical. Kids do not know how to interact with each other. We think that we can, you know, form a group and then work on this. No, they need to be taught. You look at each other, you speak kind to each other, you greet each other by name, you take turns. There's a whole structure to all this stuff that I try to also model in staff meetings so that they then do it. And you know it's a great strategy that you do it in a staff meeting one time and they just run and do it in class. That's what we need to model. Every single staff meeting should have cooperative learning in it so that you can teach that. But then also, they need direct instruction on social skills with anchor charts and mini lessons and all of the practice, you know, that the whole gradual release model, I do, we do, you do, which I call me, we, see. I want to need to do it as me. I want to do it with us, which is we. And then I want to see it with my eyes so that they can do it. Then I can give them guidance on that. Me, we, see. So they need to really be doing that individually. And if you have a child, and this is something to consider right here, if you have a child who is struggling right now with behavior, are you giving them daily behavioral lessons like you are guided reading groups, right? Think about that. Are you giving them daily guided reading groups? Yes. Are you giving them daily behavioral guided groups? Probably not, right? We weren't. That's something we're thinking about now and we're doing now. If I have a child that is tier three in like academic subjects, well, they should get all this help and they should get a reading teacher and they should have a PALS teacher and they should have groups and they should have daily this and they should have lesson plans for this. Well, that's exactly what should happen in behavior too. How in the world do you expect a kid to make great progress in behavior if they don't get all that help and support? You're putting it just all on them. Go improve yourself without any help. Go do it. And if you don't do it, you're going to get consequence and punished. Could you imagine doing that in reading? All right, child, you're two grade levels below in reading. You better come back tomorrow reading on grade level or else. That's sort of what we're doing, right? And once you put it in those terms, sometimes it's like, oh, so really just frame what you're doing behavior with what we're doing for something like reading. But it's a lot easier said than done because our schedules and our systems don't allow us sometimes to have that same support financially or in our schedules to make that happen. So a couple of ways to think about that. For me, think about time management within your day. You know, I love playing basketball, played basketball for years, played football and all that too. But the one thing for basketball was always that idea of pickup basketball. You know, I played on my high school team, I played with leagues, but playing with leagues in high school is different than playing pickup games. Playing pickup games is way more loose and social and sometimes can be difficult dynamic with social. You know, I've gotten fights on basketball courts and stuff, but it's also sometimes less about winning and losing maybe. When you play in a league game with a ref, it's very tightly controlled. There's structure. It's very clear who wins and loses. But for me, that was too much. I'm so competitive that when I did games and all that kind of thing, I would want to win no matter what. It's all about the winning. But when I play pickup basketball, it's really not about the winning. I just want to play. Even as an adult, I played for years in my last school where we did pickup games. Every Monday night, we'd have a group of guys came. It became the best time ever because that social dynamic of playing without the pressure of winning was such a positive experience. But you also need the structure of real games and practices to get better in the skill of basketball. And I think our social skills are sort of like that. You need structured practice and lessons, but you also need free social time. We're trying to consider even that time at the beginning of the day. So for instance, if we have kids starting at the beginning of the day and they're all over the place, well, maybe we're starting too heavy on them. Maybe we need to start with just more social time so that they can just really play with each other more. And especially our younger kids right now, they need to just be in playing with each other. They'll get to the academics. We will get there. But if they're coming in and they start right away with academics and they start right away with heavy, especially if they don't feel good about what they're doing, they're immediately going to step out. And if you've ever seen it, watch. Let a kid, and I have it over here, I have these little action figures I'll show you. So I got my bin of action figures, right? So I brought this for my son from his, he grew out of it now, he's like in middle school. So I got all these action figures, right? If you don't have something like that, cars, action figures, Legos, whatever it is, you can have Thor, there you go, Thor. I even have Han Solo, there you go. you gotta have these things ready to go because kids magically can play just fine and then academically they're off course, right? That teaches you something a little bit. Yes, academics are important, but we need to develop through play as well and give them that social time to play together, especially now coming after COVID where so many of them didn't have all that social play. A lot of these kids missed years of social play with their neighbors and with their friends that they'll never get back. We need to be able to give that to them. I think that we should have time every single day for social play. It should be something we do all the way through, even through middle school. They need social play time. Also consider this, as a parent I see this, kids don't play in the neighborhood like we did growing up. When we grew up, it was, hey, let's go play a pickup game of basketball, let's shoot baseball, whatever it is. Kids don't do that nowadays. As parents, we keep them tight to the house, much different than they were. So they just need to have that built in school more. So I want to ask you real quick as I pause, what are ways that you're integrating or directly teaching social and emotional skills? So put in the chat box there. What is one way that you're teaching directly or indirectly through integrating social or emotional skills? And if you're not, it's okay. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're like, Andy, that's why I came here. You know? And that's okay. That's okay. I want you to think about that because ultimately, if you're not, then you can't expect to get results. You can't expect to change the behaviors of your kids if you're not putting the time and work into it in the first place. It's a little bit call out. It's a little bit of a challenge to everyone. I see Kara said something about Harmony Inspire programs during morning meetings. Yes, morning meetings. Morning meetings. So we do class meetings every single day. Class meetings, we talk about hopes and dreams. We talk about behavioral goals for the day. We do an activity where they, you know, some type of cooperative activity where they get together and they work on their social skills every single day, every single day. We do reading buddies, and our reading buddies now are incorporating behavioral buddies so that we add that behavioral component in there. Indirectly, Ross is starting with modeling it as adults. 100% agree. I'm going to talk about that in a sec. 100% agree. What we do matters. If they say if this principal sneezes, the whole school catches a cold. Well, I think the same with behavior. If the principal starts really kicking kids out of school, everyone wants to kick kids out of school. Works both ways. If you love kids, they'll love kids. I see Jenny's Character Strong program, Purposeful People, Being School Families. People do the house families and school families and tribes and all that. That's a good idea too. The key thing about that is if you're doing a program like that, remember it's not just about who wins that week or who wins that month or the prizes with it. It's about the relationships in those groups, the relationships with the staff and all that. Those are the ones that really matter. All right? When you're doing your lessons, something to think about is what are you teaching kids? And all the way through high school, I believe, giving kids actual sort of prompts to have discussions are critical. So here's a ton of books that you could use. There's so many more out there. I think it's really important to give prompts to the discussion if you're going to have these conversations. It's really hard sometimes just to bring a kid and say, hey, let's talk about your problems, right? But if we give kids prompts to talk about problems when things are good, when things are easy, it lets them process it then so they're ready when things get tough. I think we do too much when kids are in this sort of like chaos. You can't think straight when your mind is in chaos. You can't think about self-improvement when your mind's in chaos. You have to do it once you calm down and regulate. So we need to have all these lessons when they are more calm and regulated, whether it's individuals or groups or classes. And for me, I think these are great because they're interesting, they're fun, and they still let you take different paths depending on the kid. I also like to do fun book talks and videos to, as a individual, try to inspire the whole school with that too. So sometimes I do read alouds to all the classrooms, or I do videos to help sort of send these positive messages all across the school. So I want to share one right now on the book Ish by Peter Reynolds. And make sure if Gracie and all that, make sure the sound's working. Right.
I just can't do this. Mrs. Keene, I just can't draw. It doesn't look like a landscape.
It's landscape-ish. Just keep practicing. Hey, Mr. Jax, what do you think?
Well, that reminds me of this book by Peter Reynolds, Ish. Just keep trying to do your best.
I did it.
Yes. That was so hard.
Nah, it was easy-ish.
What'd you think? What'd you think about that? So I love the 30-second book talks. You know, that's something that's out there more than just me doing it. But I try to add in behavioral lessons in every video I'm doing. I think that's so critical. I put a lot of videos out there because I do believe that individually, we can do so much school-wide. Sometimes it just takes one person. It may be you. It may be somebody else. But you need leaders to step up and be leaders. Leaders have to lead when times are tough, and they have to lead all the time. You're always on call. You're always out there. And I believe there is so much we can do school-wide to develop the attitudes we wish to see in our students. So if you say, oh, my school is negative or my school is this, you need to take some ownership on that and realize there's stuff that you can do individually to make that different, right? Like grass, your culture grows best where it's watered. So water that culture, and you can do that. In a lot of ways, watering the culture means slowing down. Slowing down our reactions, slowing down how we discipline, taking more time, being more methodical. I know that everything else is important, doing academic reviews and looking at data and visiting PLCs and all that's important, but so is the discipline and so is the behavioral part of it too. That job is just as important. Slow down with relationships, and that's going to sound backwards, but listen to what my point with this. Relationships are about vulnerability, and sometimes we want like immediate relationships, like, okay, you and I are now best friends. Go. So that's not how it works. Trust builds over time, and it builds on every single interaction over time. And so when you're asking your kids to open up to you and be vulnerable, be careful about that because they may not be ready to be vulnerable with you, and that's going to take more time. So do activities and do things and know that's the long road. And you may have times where, you know, that may not be your kid, and we have this idea that we want to help support all kids. That's true. But maybe, you know, you don't know that kid really well, and you want to discipline that kid because, when I say discipline, you want to help that kid even. But if you don't know that kid at all, and that's like another teacher's kid, you have to be really careful with that because now there is no relationship there, and with no relationship, they're not really going to listen to you in the same way. I said before, beginning with the day, slow it down. With your expectations developmentally, we need to slow down these expectations. We expect so much from these kids at this age level. Because it's really important to think about regulation and self-regulation. And again, when we slow down, we need to think about how do we self-regulate? So in the chat box, 1 through 5, how do you self-regulate? I want you to think about that. Because if you don't know how you self-regulate, it's going to be hard to talk about how students self-regulate. How do you self-regulate? 1 through 5, use like yoga, meditation? Do you do reading a book you just love to read? Do you do movie time, like with your family or yourself? Do you like barbecues, very social? Do you love exercising? Oh, I see a lot of 3s, a lot of 5s. I see a 2. I see one person had like a bunch of them. What? Someone said 2. It's Karis, you said 2 with TV? You read with a TV on? That's some serious self-regulation right there. So my point with that is that we all regulate with in different ways. Oh, Karis, you did instead of a book, you do TV, just TV time. Yep, individual TV time. We all regulate in different ways, and sometimes you regulate based on aspects of things. Like sometimes, I when I'm like in a panic attack mode, the only thing that'll really calm me down is reading. Reading is the one thing. My Kindle that's the best. But sometimes my wife will be like, Andy, you need to go work out because you're driving me crazy. Right? So it's different things you need at different times. And that's something to think about with our kids too. You need to ask them what they need in that moment. Because there's times when they need to sit and be quiet. There's times when they need to move. And that's one of my suggestions is less talk, more walk. When kids are in trouble, when they come to your office, when they something happens, get moving. Stop talking so much. We talk about all their problems. They know what their problems are. They don't need you to tell them what they are. You need to move. Walk around with them. Help deliver things to classrooms. They need to work. Do physical activities. I have these massive building blocks that I have in our back room, and I like to have kids build on those and make things. They're just physical and big, and that really helps. They need to play. Get the social things out. Let them play a little bit, and ultimately they need to learn, and that's something that can really help support teachers, because when teachers see the kids learn in your office as opposed to just sit there and play, that helps the teachers realize that you're in it to support them from the learning aspect of it too. And you have kids that just need remediation and tutoring to catch up. So think about doing things more so than just talking. Ultimately, when you are working with kids, think about the promise over punishment. This is one thing that I really think about a lot. When we say that we're going to be all in for kids, are we truly going to be all in for kids or not? Because I think so many times we say that, but then things get tough and kids misbehave, and then we kick them out of school. And I've been called out, and it's changed my career. It really changed my mindset when parents said to me one time, you know, you're about all kids, but my kid that you're trying to suspend right now, are you really about my kid? What are you going to do for my kid right now? And I thought, am I all for kids? Am I in for everybody? Or am I doing what's easy? And usually that road less traveled is hard, and that's the one that really gets you when things get hard. So I want you to really think about, if you're really promising and you're doing what you say you're doing, you know, are those actions and that follow-up exactly what you're saying out loud in your vision statement or in your mission or in your motto. And not like this guy here who has like, you know, this and then behind they're crossing their fingers. No, we want to be sincere with integrity to what we're doing. But that means you have to actually put plans in place. One of the things I think we should do is create school-wide tiered behavior support plans as opposed to consequence plans. I don't do the consequence plan. I don't do the, you know, if X, then Y. If you disrespect a teacher, then you get kicked out of class. I refuse to do that. You could do a support plan, though, which is if a kid disrespects a teacher, we're going to provide them with a check-in, check-out or something. So what are you doing to support students who misbehave as opposed to just giving them consequences? And again, misbehavior is developmentally appropriate, and it is predictable. You should be prepared for this. It's going to happen. What are you going to do about it? When kids act up, are you going to react with support or consequences? You need to be prepared in advance. I think one of the best interventions you can give is time, especially undivided attention of at least one loving adult. All it takes is one. And what that means is a lot of different things, and these are all research-based practices. 2x10s, take 10s, check-in, check-outs, restorative circles. There's so many different things that you can do in research on this. But it takes time and focus to make that happen. It's driveway discipline, making sure that you go visit these houses, meet in the driveway, have a little talk. Everything should be about restoring and developing the relationships between the families and the students and the staff when things go wrong. That's what it's all about. It's not just about, you know, appeasing parents and all that. It's about really resolving and restoring so that you can move on and move forward. Right? And it starts with a lot of different ways with check-ins. One of the things that we're doing right now is something as simple as making sure that kids know how, you know, we know what the kids' names are at the beginning of the year. We have a very diverse community. We have kids with all sorts of backgrounds from different countries. We want to make sure we know how to say their name. And you may think you know how to say all your kids' names, but we have a big school, you know, hundreds and hundreds. We have like 800, 900 kids here. Trying to say all their names is really important. Something I used to do a lot when we had our SOAR awards, when I give all these awards, is make sure before every single child I would whisper down, you know, say their name. Not in front of the microphone, but before the microphone come up, I would say it just to make sure I got it right. So in this case, one of the cool things you could do is you can do a Flipgrid video of having all the kids say their names so that everyone on the staff and everyone, all the teachers knows how to say their name right, correct pronouns, the what pronouns they want to use, all that stuff. But there's a lot of different ways you can check in with your kids. You know, you could do have them draw, you could do sticky notes, you can do online forms. Now with the virtual world, there's so many cool things that you can do. Surveys to really check in on how your kids are doing. And right now, it shouldn't just be I checked with them at the beginning of the year. It should be I checking in with them every week, every day, because that day may be that bad day that they need you, right? They may have been fine last week, but now they're not. And so we need to constantly be checking in. And there's so many cool things you can do. One of our PE teachers started doing this last year, so we started adopting this, where you do have this on a scale of how are you feeling today? And so kids would say how they're feeling based on a scale. And this is fun because you can make it very child-friendly and very fun to who they are. So, for instance, on a scale of dogs, on a scale of Bitmojis, on a scale of Dr. Jack's, how do you feel today? And those are things you can do. If you go to my website, AnnieJacks.com, you can have this template for free. It's a Google slide where you can just add in your own pictures. You could tie it to the zones of regulation if that's something you're doing in your school. Like right now, how are you all feeling in Star Wars land? What state of regulation are you, zone of regulation are you feeling? More like C-3PO, very anxious, or just cool, calm, collected like Yoda? So you can really tie this in different ways. So, you know, these all zones of regulations. But there's ways to check in person. With the sticky notes are cool because you could put on the back of the sticky note, you could put their name. And then that way other kids don't see who is doing well and who's not. And then the teacher, when they have time, can then go check the sticky notes. You can have them do bracelets, have the younger kids do a flip chart thing with the ring. And for the older kids, you can even do tokens where they can even just have some tokens on the side and just put it real discreet on their desk if they need some help. It's really important to prevent them from failing. And to prevent them from failing, you need constant temperature checks. Online, you can do things like Flipgrid, where they can either have class temperature checks or you can have an individual Flipgrid back and forth, asynchronous response back and forth. If you have like a check-in, check-out, instead of doing check-in, check-out in person, you can do it via video. You do Google Slides check-ins. You could do Padlet walls. And Padlet was something I did a lot as in our staff. And we even did playlists. So I had them put up their cats or something like that. We even created our own playlist so I could check in to see what songs motivate them. You come to one of my live sessions, we're going to do create our own playlist because that's something you can do with your staff as well. So starting to wrap it up here. I really appreciate your time. Going forward, what can you do right now? One of the things you can do right now is create some sense of urgency with structures. right? Because there's all these things you can put out there, but how are you structuring the support you give your teachers? One of the things I think you do is the student focus meetings. So it sounds more extravagant than it really is. It's just regular optional support groups for teachers to seek help. We bring our counselors, our reading teachers, administrators, whoever we can, so that teachers know that every couple of weeks we have a meeting. They can sign up for it, and all they do is come and describe what the challenges they're facing. I want to know that we're here to support them and not to judge them. After that meeting, we can provide interventions, behavior plans, whatever that is, but we're always there to support them. Your mental health team should be meeting every week at this point. So psychologists and social worker, admin counselors. Last year we did this. It was really helpful having them just quick Zoom meetings where we just check, especially those tier 2, tier 3 students on how they're doing. And then ultimately having that behavioral support plan, like I showed you earlier, start to develop what that plan looks like so that inevitably when kids do go into tier 2 or 3, you have exactly what they're going to get right there and then. So the next day they can support, they can be supported through check-ins and check-outs and all those things. So having that in place is really critical. And why? Because I think it's important that we don't just react to problems, that we process the problems, right? So it's not just about reacting, it's about processing. And there's a staff support and a student support that you need. And the goals are a little bit different for students and staff. The goals for staff are about reducing staff conflict, increasing support, and that feeling of support, improving skills of all the people involved, including yourself, and potentially identifying other things that they need that you can put in place in your role as administrator. For students, it's about being solutions-oriented and not blaming the student, not just admiring the problem, about really targeting specific areas that you want to improve on for that child, and also be treating that child like a parent, like you would. Not that we're just going to like throw everything against that child, it's all their fault, and let's get rid of them, but no, they're going to be here, they should stay here, so how can we help them and love them unconditionally? You know, the different examples are things we can get into if we ever want to talk offline, or if you want to talk with any kind of training that I do, because there's actually things with fidelity and follow through that matter, because you can say you want to do all these things, but if you don't do it day in and day out, you're not going to make the progress that you think you're going to make. In fact, that's one thing that you should always check. If someone says, hey, I've been doing all these things, you should say, okay, let's be real about this. Are you really doing them every single day? Do you have a checklist, a fidelity checklist, or an intervention calendar where they sign off every single day that they did that intervention? Because I bet they didn't, because we found we didn't either. Assemblies and absences and busyness can get in the way. Boredom can get in the way. And just like the greats are ones that do the boring stuff day in, day out, even when it's hard and even though they don't want to. That's what separates them. That's what we need to do in our schools. An example of a very tangible thing you could do with interventions is journal the journey, where you give a very specific goal for students, and this would be good for a check-in, check-out, or a 2x10, or individual, any type of like intervention you want to give individually, is have a very specific goal that the child is choosing, you're choosing with the child. And then every day, either the child or you, or both, take notes on how that day went. And it's not a judgment thing. It's not judging how they did. It's how they feel they did and what they saw around them that happened. And then have them do a self-rating. And you may say, well, they're just going to give themselves 10 out of 10. They don't. I've been doing this for a long time. They do not just give themselves 10 out of 10. They're pretty tough on themselves, just like we typically are on our days. But it's good to track why did they have these things and what could they do about it in the future. So that's just a small example of something you could do that's very specific. At the end of the day, it's all about how you support your kids. Right, Dr. Branch? It's about how you support your kids, just like we talk about with MESP, how we support all kids. Because I truly feel, I want you to think about this as we close, we are defined by how we support those most struggling kids. When the time gets tough, that's where you define your legacy. That's where you define what you do for kids. Not when it's easy. Anybody can do that. It's when things get tough and it gets hard, and that's why you are in the right place at the right time. And my challenge to you is when things do get tough and hard, that's when you know. Andy said, okay, this is it. This is that moment. He said it, and it's true. Right now is that moment. I need to step up. So I really appreciate your time. If you want additional resources, I have the podcast, Discipline Win Podcast, check out. I have a free resource library on my website where you can get all these templates you can just go ahead and use. And, of course, I got the book with a bunch of resources coming out soon. And on that note, I think we're wrapping up, Dr. Branch. I know this is fast and furious session, so I want to give everything I could in an hour session. So I appreciate
you
everyone.
You were
coming.
Great.
We were in it to win it, right, Dr. Branch?
That's right. And you shared so many specific strategies and activities that they can do. I'm going to remember less talk, more walk.
Yeah,
that's great to remember. Right. Andy, you never disappoint. I'm going to go to your website and spend some more time there. I mean, the resources you shared are great and will be invaluable as we really look for multiple ways to support kids and meet them where they are. So thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. And good luck, everybody. You can do it this year. You can definitely do it. We're in it to win it.